This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind to Raw with John Pollock and waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind to Raw. For Monday night, download it Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind to Raw for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
It is Rewind to Raw, the impaired vision edition of Raw, Perth, Western Australia.
Oh, interesting. I like that.
Third show in a row, Monday morning Raw. Wade, how did you feel about the morning edition of Raw?
I didn't mind it at all. It was kind of nice. You know, I started the show at about like 10 a.m. ish. And it's nice to record in the afternoon because it means I'll have my evening to do other things.
Yes, I was looking forward to this Monday morning edition of Raw. I was like, this is going to work out great. It's a holiday, so my kids are at home. My wife is sick. This did not turn out very well for me this morning. So it was a bit chaotic, to say the least. But hey, we got through this show, third show in a row from Australia. Maybe next time they can avoid the Canadian Thanksgiving weekend.
It would be helpful if they avoided a PA day. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That would be wonderful. Before we get to Raw, we just wrapped up our news pack for the XL members on the Post Wrestling Cafe, going through King of Pro Wrestling highlights, including a new IWGP World Heavyweight Champion and an angle shot with Aaron Wolf to set up his debut match on January 4th. Highs and lows of TNA Bound for Glory. There were examples from Column A and Column B, including, you know, I was watching one of the matches and I thought, you know what? This is how Rock Hogan should have ended. The lights go out. Hall and Nash just storm the ring. That would have been memorable. I think that's the one negative I have about Rock Hogan back in 2002. It was too clean.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's going to remember this? Need an angle.
I think Dark State should have interrupted Rock Hogan.
At that time in 2002 when they were children?
Yeah, pretty much. None of them were probably even born yet. But I think from even just, they should time travel and go back and ruin Rock versus Hogan.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen a... Well, Cutler James was one, so I mean, that would have been, I mean, a bunch of babies.
What's a
entering...
baby doing in the sky, though?
Development state, yes. What could have been if we had been booking WWF in 2002? As well, we went through the latest injury to Kota Ibushi as he's recovering from a broken femur and teeing up what is coming on this week with NXT 3-hour edition of Dynamite / Collision Impact, whatever Impact is doing on Thursday. We'll have you covered this week. But as we mentioned later today, WH Park and Karen will have a review of King of Pro Wrestling up at postwrestlingcafe.com. Poison Rana is back on Tuesday night with a review of NXT. And Wednesday, it's the return of Pollock and Thurston, and we will be going an hour later for Rewind to Dynamite after the 3-hour extravaganza from Kansas City.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go from early morning Raw to late night Dynamite.
There's a lot of stuff. Yeah. As well, this week we've got on the Post Wrestling Cafe a review of Peacemaker Season 2. It's the return of DCU later, with Rich Van and WH Park. They'll be talking about John Cena's latest major television series. I actually haven't heard like so much response to it myself because I haven't necessarily been seeking it, but I'm certainly interested and I'm curious, especially for their opinions on the finale, which I have heard has been at least pretty interesting.
Pretty interesting.
As much as I could say.
That's so cryptic. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, leave it to WH and Rich to determine if you should watch this series or not. And Thursday, Rewind Away, we'll be covering the 1992 G1 Climax. If you had not corrected me the other day of what we were reviewing, I was absolutely going to watch the wrong thing for this week's show. So thank you for that correction. I I can't keep any of this stuff straight at this point.
I don't blame you.
Wei gives me a, he just says, watch this, and I do it. That's all. That's how this works. But yes, we're going back 33 years to the G1, starring Masahiro Chono and Rick Rude. What does a G1 featuring Terry Taylor look like?
What does a G1 featuring Steve Austin look like? That to me is somewhat appealing, and I know I'll probably be underwhelmed by whatever match we're getting to see, but still, it's Steve Austin in the G1.
Yeah. Imagine he had done his big promo after the G1. Talk about your Chonos. Talk about your Hashimoto's. Steve. And none of the Japanese fans would know what he was saying, and it would just be into the dust. But we will be talking about 1992 G1 coming up this Thursday. On to Raw at the RAC Arena. And we had Michael Cole announcing 13,737. He's accompanied by Wade Barrett on the call. Outcome, The Vision. And this would be the show all about The Vision and the Seth's a Wanker chant that is sadly going to be copied by every American audience afterward, I think, after this.
I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure about this one.
What original chants do any American audiences come up with? Everything is, when do they go overseas again so we can find some new things to do? Like, they're still coasting off the singing the guy's name from the European tour at the beginning of the year.
No doubt, but Wanker is such a, you know, like a UK Australian type of phrase that I just don't necessarily think it'll have the same.
I think they'd be willing to borrow this. If they had called them the C word, there might have been a little hesitancy. I think I don't think American audiences can get away with that one as cleanly as a UK crowd could. But I mean, you're not going to get that chant here in Australia, probably.
Yeah, I don't know if Wade Barrett would have been repeating that one on commentary.
I'm afraid I've got some bad news. You. So Seth laughs it off, calling them wankers. And the crowd, like, they were kind of like, ha, ha, ha. They enjoyed this.
Oh, this baby faced him for sure. Yeah.
Well, Seth, who was, he was dressed as like my grandparents' couch. like the upholstery was just turned into this like Sherlock Holmes looking jacket here that he had. I mean, it was quite something. He goes through each member of The Vision. He talks about Paul Heyman being the GOAT. He is a blessed man for being in Paul's presence. And Paul kisses him on the cheek. The crowd chants kiss. So Rollins kisses him on the forehead. Braun, he turns his attention to. He tells him, do that tweak. And Braun, who just feels like I'm a goddamn puppet for this man, takes off his glasses and he does the most forced tweak where he just knows that I'm just like the toy at the party to be shown off to. Like, do that thing you do.
This is when he made his decision.
I mean, yeah, there are some times that WWE, they're so obsessed with surprises and things that you never see coming. If you were paying half attention to this show, everything led to this closing angle. It was laid on so thick. The only thing was I was not expecting it to happen when it did. Mm-hmm. And that was the surprise element. But they were going so heavy that it was so clear that the fracture is occurring. So anyway,
I was going to say, especially if you, if you watch really any of them, but especially Paul Heyman, you know, in like digging for photos for the thumbnail for this, I mean, they got some really great shots of Heyman, just like you could tell in the background, eyeing specifically, not just Rollins, but the championship in particular. And so,
is that WrestleMania? Yeah. Paul
Heyman, Seth Rollins? Yes. Yeah, perhaps. Mm.
He praises Breaker as the future of this industry. And just the look Braun had about the emphasis on future. And then the crowd, they're all singing for Reed, and Rollins praises him for beating Roman. But again, I gave you all the tools to beat Roman Reigns. He says, nobody is on my level. I've never needed anyone, including the members of The Vision. I did it all on my own. I beat Cody with one good arm, and Then we had the most expensive pyro display to end a opening promo segment I have ever seen to conclude the first 15 minutes. I mean, really, this was just laying the table for what was to come on the show, because very little was said here, but it was all in how it was said and the delivery by Seth Rollins.
Mm-hmm. This was meant to be, you know, a victory speech for Seth Rollins after overcoming, like, arguably the biggest obstacle of his I guess recent years of his career in Cody. But it also served as, I mean, just a really sort of like ominous foreshadowing of what was to come later on the show. But I mean, there was a real sort of like feeling of finality to the group in hearing Rollins, you know, talk about them almost like as if he was saying goodbye here, you know. I mean, here it kind of played off more so as an introduction or reintroduction to, you know, the various members of the group. But I mean, when we look back on it, it definitely felt like a bit of a goodbye of sorts. I thought Rollins was a lot of fun here, you know, like he was playing off of the crowd, I think, really well. That improvised head kiss on Paul Heyman. Like if this group was going to last a little bit longer, that would have been, I think, a wonderful little like signature thing that those two could have had together.
Don't you remember when they did that for Heat, when Heyman would come out and kiss Ryback, and they did that for Heat?
I do not remember anything.
Was like, ew, men kissing? Boo!
I do not remember a thing about that Ryback-Paul Heyman run, but thank you for the reminder. But, you know, like even in these moments, I feel like there were some elements of just like Seth Rollins like playing to the crowd in a way that made him more likable and fun to watch, you know, whether it be repeating the wanker line or some of the other elements here. I felt like there was an element of like fun interaction that he was having with the crowd that I wonder if it was intentional. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, John and Wei go to the movies with a review of The Smashing Machine, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, based on the documentary around Mark Kerr. Plus, it's Rewind Away, covering the 2017 documentary Nobody Speak, Trials of the Free Press. Also coming your way is reviews of Bound for Glory, King of Pro Wrestling, weekly editions of Collision Course, Post Pro Res with Karen Peterson and WH Park, and the XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, ad-free here at Post Wrestling Cafe. Penta and Rusev meet in the back, and Penta's got a title match tonight, but Rusev feels he was cheated out of his match with Dominic, and he gets to face the winner of tonight's match next week. And if Penta wins, I'm not going to forget about that kick from last week. So I guess if Penta loses, then all bets are off. It's water under the bridge. But if you do win, then I'm coming for revenge. Dom walks up from behind, sees them, turns right around. Dominic was great on this show. He takes on Penta, and I thought this was one of Dominic's like better performances, just in terms of the full package of a heel that is, they're trying to make him more and more like he can hang with these guys, but once they get to the deep waters, he does have to resort to his heel tactics. And he's one of the few guys that, like, there is this tsunami of fan support for Dominic that they are fighting. And I think overall they're doing a fairly good job at it of trying to keep this guy in this heel role, because he's so great in the like slimy heel, like manipulator role that he's in. And this was kind of evidence of that in this match.
Well, it is exactly the Eddie Guerrero playbook, is it not? You know, Eddie, when he was a heel, towards the latter stages of him actually being a full on heel, like it he was so likable that it was almost a struggle to kind of like, you know, keep that away from the crowd. But I think they're walking that fine line really well. And I feel like we sense that they have to hold this off until Liv is ready to come back, don't they?
Yeah, they're sending texts every other day. How's the shoulder? How's the shoulder? How's rehab? Yeah. Penta shoulders himself into the corner, and Dom hits a suicide dive into a DDT and sends Penta into the timekeeper's area. They went past two commercial breaks. Penta goes for the Three Amigos. The crowd actually cheers when Dominic reverses it. It's like, we want Dominic to do the Three Amigos. We don't want you doing the Three Amigos.
Yeah.
Penta would avoid a 619, hits the Made in Japan, and then runs into a Michinoku driver when Rusev comes down, and Penta just lands a dive square on Rusev, and this allows Dominic to go ringside. He grabs the timekeeper's hammer and his title belt, puts the belt in the center for the referee to be distracted by it, and uses the hammer to nail Penta in the knee, places it into his boot to hit a 619. Fans love this, and hits a frog splash in 1537 to keep the title. And then just the added bonus at the end was he goes to get his belts from the timekeeper. I think this is Fred Ottman's kid. And he just points to the belts. So as he turns his back to grab the belts, he tosses the hammer right back there. Just a nice added touch as well. Again, I think they're really trying to fight a tide here with Dominic. But I just thought he came across, like, if you are, in fact, building this guy up for a match with John Cena, this is the way you should be portraying him, is that this can't just be, like, John Cena's going to come in here and wipe the mat with this guy. I think you have to have Dominic, like, he's got to be able to squeak out these victories, that there's some shred of doubt. And you've got, like, the San Diego backdrop on top of it for that Survivor Series show.
Oh, that'll be really interesting to hear the crowd's response. I mean, Cena, no one's booing Cena, of course, but is Dominic going to get booed in San Diego? You know, especially this version of Dominic, which is almost like you can almost classify as a tweener.
And do you incorporate Ray into this as well?
Like 100% you do. Yes.
Like you organically introduced that 619 spot over the weekend with Cena of... Yep. The idea of if John Cena is going to hit a 619, that's the match he does it in, not in Australia. Totally. You make people wait 2 months to see that 619, and he better be practicing that one and not blowing out a hip if he tries it.
100%, yeah. I thought this match was great. It was certainly heightened by a really excellent crowd that they had in Perth today, but I thought these two did everything to maximize that crowd's already very high energy. I mean, Dom, you know, like at this point, we're already well past the sort of Nepo baby conversation about him. I mean, because I think he's very much proven his value as, I think, somebody who is a complete pro wrestler that justifies his spot on the roster. He, in ring, I think, is of a pretty, like, good to very good caliber. And I think as a character, he gets consistently some of the biggest reactions on this card, whether it be in America, Mexico, or Australia. I really like the finish here. I thought it was a very clever way to, again, like, play up the Eddie Guerrero sort of, like, clever cheating style of him. And again, if, like, who would have predicted that after this weekend the 619 would be the most over move, right? You know, in this company, right? So I don't know if they necessarily, so on Saturday it felt like an audible. Here I could believe that they were anticipating the crowd to cheer for the 619, so much so that I thought they devised a very clever spot, you know, to incorporate it into the finish. And I think it perfectly sets up that moment in San Diego if this is indeed the match.
Jackie Redmond interviews LA Knight. There's going to be a three-way match with Knight, Jey Uso, and CM Punk tonight to determine who gets the next title shot. And he explains that this isn't a number one contenders match. It's for the title because it's a guarantee LA Knight beats Seth Rollins after he wins tonight. CM Punk enters and LA Knight responds to Punk saying, "You need to accept the isness that is me." The isness.
Is that what the kids are saying?
I don't know. I have no idea. Backstage, Asuka walks in and berates a Kairi Sane that is beside herself after this humiliating loss on Saturday. And Kairi is so apologetic. She tells Asuka, "I will fix this. I could speak to Io." Asuka doesn't want to hear it. Tonight, Kairi must beat Rhea Ripley. I am in charge. And then Sane moves her hair aside to show this big bruise on her forehead from eating the running boot from Rhea Ripley to protect Asuka. Says, "I did this to protect you." Asuka slaps the shit out of her. In response, this crowd and Kairi are stunned as Asuka walks off. Asuka is just incredible. In this role. I can't get enough of these segments with these two. I mean, this slap was just out of nowhere.
Yeah, it was amazing. I think these two have just been getting better and better every time I see these sort of segments, because, I mean, they and the writers have really honed in on what makes these characters work. And I feel it's very clear now that the person who stands to benefit the most from the story isn't EO, isn't even Asuka. It's going to be Kyrie. You know, this is going to be Kyrie Sane's story by the end of it all, because I think they're doing such a great job of making us feel sympathetic for her. They're making the audience want to see her stand up to Asuka so badly with every one of these big, big slaps. And I thought Kyrie's performance was excellent. I think she could be the biggest baby face out of the group, really coming out of all this, provided she stays healthy, which I think is always going to be a question with like the style and maybe even like the ferocity of some of these slaps.
When they ride this out to eventually get to Kyrie and Asuka, like they could make that into a really big deal by the time they get there.
Very much so. And I think Asuka is on one of the biggest runs of her entire WWE career here. Like her, this is the type of like villain that I think should be their next champion very shortly. I can in fact see her taking the belt off of Vakir at some point, because it directly places Io and eventually Kyrie in contention for that championship as well. So it's probably my favorite story in the company right now.
I think that this is, outside of the NXT run, this is to me Asuka's best WWE like period that she has had in her decade with the company. They showed Alexander Volkanovski and Jack Della Maddalena and promoted Jack Della Maddalena's fight with Islam Makhachev coming up at Madison Square Garden next month. Rhea Ripley and Kairi Sane, a lot of time that these two had. Io is in Rhea's corner and Asuka is with Kairi. So Asuka frequently got onto the apron distracting Rhea, and as Kairi took over, the crowd is chanting "fuck her up, Rhea," which they had to censor here. It's just always so awkward when they've got to censor these chants. Rhea lands a kick.
Wanker's totally cool, though.
That's fine, but you can't say fuck. Riptide gets avoided. Rhea runs her shoulder into the post from the edge, and then Kairi manages an insane elbow to the floor, and we see a wheelbarrow into a stunner by Kairi. And I would say as well, not just character-wise, but Kairi has also been having a lot better matches of late as well. Like, you're not getting those blemishes that had unfortunately kind of become a staple of a lot of these Kairi matches. Rhea gets hung in the corner, takes a double stomp, the cutlass, and then Kairi leaps off the top and gets caught, slammed onto the shoulders, and when Asuka gets back onto the apron, Io pulls her down, and after a kick to the head, Rhea wins with the Riptide in 16 minutes, and crowd goes nuts for Rhea. Asuka runs Io into the post, and then Rhea boots Asuka off the apron, clears the desk, but Kairi fights back and nails her with a kendo stick. And Asuka DDTs Rhea on top of the desk. So the Kabuki Warriors stand above the fallen Rhea Ripley and Io Sky. And obviously a continuation of this program, which, again, as they are keeping Rhea away from this title picture as long as possible, they've really stumbled into like this great program that to me is way more compelling than what's going on with either women's championship on either show at the moment.
Agreed. I think it says something about maybe how much they want to position, you know, the EO, Asuka, and Kairi in a focal point on the show when they had EO take the pin rather than Rhea Ripley in her own home country. So I think this continues to just show that like they're putting a lot of effort and it's really paying off into building EO, Asuka, Kairi. I thought there was very noticeable emphasis from the announcers here to talk about Kairi as a sympathetic babyface here, emphasizing her in-ring improvements. And to me, it just seemed to confirm like the long-term babyface push that they're giving her right now. And I thought all of it was very effective. But match was good. I thought, though, it was the continued hints of Kairi's character work, not just out of the ring, but in-ring here. You know, she plays the match really well in her character. Like the match on Saturday, where Kairi looked very terrified of being caught between her best friend and her, maternal figure in professional wrestling. Here, she was terrified of disappointing Asuka again and suffering even a bigger beating. I thought Kairi was, I think the most interesting where we've seen her on the main roster so far.
It's also worth noting, WWE, they're doing another show this Wednesday in Melbourne, and then Friday, Saturday, they're doing back-to-back nights at Sumo Hall at Ryogoku, which is where King of Pro Wrestling was today. And obviously, the EO and the Kabuki Warriors are on that show. Julia's on the show. Nakamura's on the show. So interesting shows just to see what the reactions are like.
Not televised, though. We won't be able to see that.
No, it's not. Though I always think in like certain instances like that, like those are the perfect kinds of matches that I would just throw up on YouTube, for instance. Like I think like those are ones that have at least a curiosity to see the match and they seem more open to that. But
you'll find it on the vault in about 20 years.
20 years when they go back to Japan for an anniversary.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chalk Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
The Usos meet in the locker room. Jimmy is still upset with Roman. Jay says they need to be like Reigns and just look out for themselves. And Jimmy doesn't think that that sounds like Jay. Jay needs to focus on his triple threat tonight. And Jimmy gets upset, assuming that Jay doesn't want to help him tonight and doesn't believe that he can handle Bronson Reed, which if that's what Jay was thinking, he was pretty accurate in that assessment. This guy's got like broken ribs that he's selling from the spear on Saturday, and he goes against Bronson Reed and gets murdered. He gets hit with a World's Strongest Slam. The jersey is ripped off, revealing the ribs being injured. Jimmy manages the Uso in the wind.
Yeah, it doesn't really work as well.
Not quite. He lifts up Bronson on his shoulders, but collapses and is hit with sentons and a tsunami in 7:38 as Bronson wins yet again in Australia. I mean, for all the talk about when they would go to hometowns or home countries, what an opposite philosophy that has come out of this newer era where they just had the Australians run roughshod this weekend.
Yeah, very different. Yeah, good stuff. I thought the finish the match went an appropriate time. I like that the finish wasn't drawn out for near falls. You know, you had Jimmy Uso stupidly going for a Samoan drop on those bruised ribs, and it created a very, you know, good dramatic reaction anytime you have somebody try to lift up somebody heavy, much less on that rib injury. He fails, and Reed just swarms him with the tsunami and just goes right to the finish. I thought that was very good. I think they're doing a great job with Jimmy, like making him, you know, push him towards like the status of a Jey Uso at present time. I hate to say this, but I do feel like he needs to get in Jey Uso's shape. You know, one of the very unfortunate things about being a twin is that you're always going to be compared physically to your twin brother. And we know from watching Unreal that like cardio is like, you know, was one of the factors that they were you know, questioning about Jey Uso and whether or not he was capable of, I guess, being in a main event level shape. And Jimmy Uso, I sense that they want to elevate him up to a Jey Uso status, but I also know that this is going to be a company that is going to look towards whether or not he truly wants it enough by looking at, you know, whether or not he can get into that main event level shape that they like, you know. So I do feel like that might be one of the things that they will continue to study.
Well, maybe they'll give him this note a week before the Royal Rumble that you've got to get in shape, and then he'll correct that issue quietly, and then he wins the Royal Rumble like we saw on Unreal.
That's it. Yes.
I mean, Jay corrected this issue in like 10 minutes of Unreal. Braun Breaker comes out, spears Jimmy, and it's a 2-on-1 attack until Jay runs out to help his brother. So Reed nearly overshot him with this avalanche, and the announcers were like, oh no, his shoulder. And he had to sell the ribs, so he's holding that. And Reed is eventually fought off with a super kick. And Jay is upset, telling Jimmy, I told you. I don't know what he told him, but I mean, Jay came out here, he got hurt, and then he was mad at Jimmy for getting his ass kicked.
Well, Jay suggested going at it alone, which Jimmy did. But then Jay also said that wasn't what I was about to say. So I don't know what he was actually about to say.
Oh, I took it he was annoyed that I've come out. Now I'm injured going into my match. It's like, I don't know. You volunteered for this. So it's like I ran into the burning building to save you and now I got burned. It's like, okay, you can't be both a hero and a complainer at the same time. Favorite part, forget Asuka and Kairi, the real gems on this show. It's Bayley and Lyra Valkyria. So I was on YouTube today and I'm scrolling through and I saw this post mocking the acting ability of Lyra. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And I clicked on it. It was our video. I clicked on it. I'm like, it was us talking about it. I was like, wow, they got me. This hooked me in.
You were the person kind of making fun.
It was me talking about it with you. I had no idea. So
let me just take the moment to shout out a couple new editors that we have working for us on our video front, and that's Luke, who's been doing a great job, making these highlights for us on after every single one of these episodes, and Sean, who also edits a lot of these. And so we've just been pumping out a lot more, vertical videos on our TikTok, on our Instagram Shorts. Hard to keep track of it all. Instagram Reels. So please subscribe and find maybe, portions of this. Leave a comment. That always helps us out as well.
Lyra asks Bailey, okay, you sure that you're good? You woke up okay? I still don't know if I can trust you. Sometimes we're just a little bit off. And if I can't trust you, this is going to be a one-time thing. And Bailey just laughs this off. It's like, oh, we're going to be fine. So Bailey and Lyra against Roxanne Perez and Raquel Rodriguez. To emphasize this confusion from Bailey, Michael Cole shares us that some days he gets complimentary texts from Bailey, and then the next he gets angry texts from Bailey.
Mm-hmm.
This is how this works.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The crowd is singing for Bailey. She's working with Lyra. They're in control. And then they get the heat on Bailey. Lyra gets booted off the apron, and Raquel pulls down the rope, so Bailey crashes, and Lyra ends up fighting them off and tries to get Bailey by pushing her and getting her to go, and suddenly Bailey gets slapped in the face. So Maybe this is what Asuka was trying to elicit out of Kairi. She was just trying to motivate her for this match with Rhea. And Bailey awakens. She's like Luke Gallows here with the ring bell. And she fires up on them, dives to the floor, and ends with an elbow off the top, Rose Plant, pinning Perez in 11 minutes and 11 seconds. And they're on the same page. Their attitudes were in alignment. Their personalities clicked, and we had the fully fledged unit of Bailey and Lyra this week on Raw.
Mm-hmm.
Congrats.
It's a very ridiculous character, but one that I really enjoy, and I think fits the sort of like ridiculous tone of this like mid-card program. Like I thought tonight was like a nice evolution of the Bailey Hulk character. You know, we've gone through the first movie where like she's terrified in the whole city. Everybody's trying to, stop her. But now we're at the Avengers where like we can not just only trust, but we can weaponize the Beast to our advantage. And I thought tonight was like, it was essentially Lyra's I adore you, but I need the other guy moment that Black Widow and Hulk shared in Age of Ultron. So they're playing this nicely, and I think it's actually working and turning something interesting out of what Bailey's going through right now. So didn't really love the match. I feel like I've seen smoother from this four, but I thought overall fine to convey this storyline.
If she slaps her again, does that send her in the opposite direction? Is she like on?
No, it only makes her more angry.
Oh, okay. So you can't reverse
it. It's not an off and on switch.
I mean, that's kind of the character, right? She's got dual personality.
Yeah, but you can't just
turn it. How do we flip the switch?
You can't turn it off to make her not angry. You got to calm her down.
Okay. Rollins and Heyman are in the back, and Rollins reiterates his love for Paul Heyman. I mean, he says the last 6 months are nothing compared to what the next 6, 12, 18 months are going to be, and something big is on the horizon. Reed and Breaker walk in. He says, I love you guys too. This is the most incredible weekend of my life. There was the birth of my child, my wedding day, and watching you two grow are the proudest accomplishments of my life. You are now in rarefied air, and we are close to taking the next step. What is going to be next? There is no one that can knock us off that mountaintop. I mean, folks, if you could not see where the car was headed here, I mean, this was just, they were really laying it on here heavily. Yeah. Pierce meets up with Allen, coming off his match, says, damn, wish I could have won that match, but hey, whatever, it's John Cena. and praises the match with John. Dominic interrupts, complaining about having a match with Rusev next week, and calls himself the only working champion around here. And I swear, AJ's response is, well, Cheater McGee has a point here. And he suggests that JD and Finn Balor defend their tag titles against AJ and Dragon Lee. Pierce agrees, makes the match for next week, and tells Dom, you can go tell your partners that they've got a tag title match next week. And Cheater McGee walks off camera upset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what?
No, that was it.
Yeah, fun way to further that Dom and Balor story. Yeah, perfectly cool.
So we're getting three title matches next week with the tag titles, a rematch between Becky Lynch and Maxine Dupri for the IC title, and Dominic Rusev. Stephanie McCarr is brought out and interviewed by Jackie Redmond. She is the first woman in WWE to win four titles in 1 year, which is a very specific accomplishment. She is interrupted by Raquel and Perez, who Perez takes issue saying, I had beaten Io. I should have been in the WrestlePalooza match, and I would have been the crown jewel champion. And a lot of MMA math to get to this challenge that is made. But Roxanne will not face Stephanie on her timetable. You will face me on mine, which it's been a while since we have done the I'm the challenger and I will dictate the terms of my title challenge, as was introduced here by Roxanne Perez.
Yeah, well, they pulled it out here. Yeah, I feel they have quite the gall to try to pump Roxanne up for a world title match after just showing her getting pinned, like within, I feel like, the half hour of this particular show. I mean, Roxanne at this point really is like the weaker position as the weaker person of her tag team with Raquel. And I understand that they want to be protective of the giant, but I do think they need to have treated Roxanne a little bit more carefully with their booking to justify this escalation, this interaction right away, because something like this just completely just, I mean, it's already a mockery, whatever sort of ranking system that they have, but this even kind of makes that just highlighted a little bit more so. So didn't really love that. Of course, they're probably going to give Roxanne a few more wins coming off of this, but I think they needed to do that prior to this interaction. For Vicar, I mean, we all know how great she is in the ring, but I think it's these talking segments that are probably just as big of a challenge for her personally every single week. We've seen her deliver good solo promos. During the Stratton feud, we've seen one-on-one interactions, but that wasn't necessarily heated. I felt like against a full-on heel here in Roxanne Perez, we got to see, you know, Vicar actually do some real trash talking, and I thought she conveyed some pretty good confidence, you know, that felt believable, and I thought she overall sounded really good, you know? So other than that last line, what did she say at the very end here?
I missed the line.
I will wait something. Like she said, Stephanie says basically I'll wait. And then she said something that I couldn't really make out. But otherwise, she's been sounding great. And no doubt she's been probably spending a lot of time working on her promo ability, which I think has paid off.
The screen was also engulfed by smoke. I felt like we were watching like the Dungeon of Doom here for Halloween month. Well, there was a lot of it out here. Couldn't get over this. This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, John and Wei go to the movies with a review of The Smashing Machine, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, based on the documentary around Mark Kerr. Plus, it's Rewind Away, covering the 2017 documentary Nobody Speak, Trials of the Free Press. Also coming your way is reviews of Bound for Glory, King of Pro Wrestling, weekly editions of Collision Course, Post Pro Res with Karen Peterson and WH Park, and the XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, ad-free here at Post Wrestling Cafe. Main event is Jey Uso, LA Knight, and CM Punk. So Punk was there like all weekend, but they saved him right at the end of the three nights in Perth, and this crowd went insane for Punk. He comes out, they cut to what I can only imagine is going to be this woman that they caught in the crowd is going to replace the man that reacted when Punk returned at the United Center in 2021. She's got a sign that she's waited 19 years to see CM Punk, and she is in tears during his entrance. I mean, this was a level of emotion you don't see for too many arrivals. So as the music ends, they continue to sing Cult of Personality, and the crowd's just going wild at the beginning for Punk. Kind of like a standard three-way match. He attempts a GTS very early on, but it's turned into an inverted DDT by LA Knight and into his leaping elbow. Knight would scale to the top, superplexing Punk, and then Jay immediately goes for the Uso splash to Knight after he lands from the superplex, getting a two count. Punk gets sent into the BFT, and then Jay goes to the floor, pulls LA Knight out of the ring, and sends him into the steps, allowing Jay to climb to the top. Punk gets the knees up for the Uso splash, and then to the GTS, where Punk pins Jay Uso in 13 and a half minutes, becoming the number one contender for the World Heavyweight title.
Good match. I thought they all worked really hard. Jay and Knight especially, because they had to compete with Punk's star power as baby faces. And that's a very tough sell, you know, without one of them actually leading that much towards being a heel. I thought those two did actually very well. I thought the crowd was really amazing all throughout the night, but especially here in response to CM Punk, who they had to wait, you know, basically the entire weekend to be able to see. And they treated him like he was a massive, massive, massive star. Strong match, but of course, in conversation, we'll be overshadowed by what followed it.
Yeah, so you had several minutes to go still in the broadcast. So the Vision come out, and Braun sprints down the aisle, spearing Jay, and then runs around the ring, spearing LA Knight. So they are dead. They surround CM Punk in the ring, and Breaker and Reed pounce on him. There's a spear by Breaker, a tsunami by Reed, and Rollins tells Punk he will never be champion, and they send him to the floor. And you have all four standing up, and then credits. Paul Levesque, Lee Fitting, and if you were watching this on delay like most people were, you see 4 minutes remaining with these credits up. And Breaker walks over to the corner, his back is turned, and he turns around and spears Seth Rollins. Paul Heyman is stunned. He can't believe what he is seeing. Bronson Reed is no-selling it, and Braun stands up, goes into Reed's face, and tells him, "You've got to make a choice." And Bronson contemplated this for about 6 seconds and pulled Seth Rollins over and landed the tsunami onto Seth. Breaker grabs the belt and looks at Heyman. Heyman doesn't know what to do, and then on the spot, he decides to align with the future, and he raises up Reed and Breaker's arms, and that is how we end with the end of the Vision, as we know it, with Seth.
Great angle.
Very strong angle to end the show, and certainly disrupts like a lot of like where you come out of this, because it really like muddies things to get to this Rollins Punk match out of this. And you would think also like throws out like that potential of the Vision together for the War Games match as well.
Yeah. So again, shocking, I think, because
if you watch this show, you knew the turn was coming. I didn't think they would be doing it on this show.
You knew the turn was coming the moment this group was formed, right? Eventually. But yeah,
they laid it on so thick on this show. Like it was like not even knowing that they were doing the turn. Like I had no doubt that they are that we are getting to the end of this group. It was just a question of when. And I think those are the kinds of surprises that are good. Like you can see something is coming, but you don't know when it's coming. And I thought like it was a really well executed angle. It's just where you go from all of this of Seth being on the outs here and what you have lined up. Like this guy has been the top heel on, like, really, he's pretty much the top heel in the whole company that you're now doing this turn with.
Yeah, yeah. The shocking thing about it is the timing of it, you know, because I felt like there was certainly still a lot of life left in the group. There's still a lot of life left in Seth Rollins as a heel. And so you're left asking a lot of questions about what this means for his status as a heel, what it means for the status of Becky Lynch by association as a heel. She's obviously likely to stick with her husband. Does that mean Becky turns back into a babyface? What does it mean for War Games, you know? With this being so fresh, I mean, I also don't think we can entirely write out the idea that like this might have been done due to other factors. We don't know like whether or not he might actually be suffering from any sort of injury that we don't know about. Or could this all be a setup for the other biggest ruse of the century, John?
I hate those angles where it's like you murder a guy and it's a joke. I don't see that being the turn here, because I think it just comes off like really lame at that point to do something like that.
Yeah, I just don't write it out. I don't write out that this could be a legitimate reason for this turn happening at the moment. But no matter what, I do think like Bron Breakker is certainly more than ready to be in this position as being a focal point of a faction. I think Bronson Reed essentially kind of takes a step up to himself. We've already had a bit of an audition.
This weekend was about these two. Like this whole weekend was about these two guys and getting them to the next levels, beating Roman, doing the turn, and like they are advancing. Like you can look like this is... These were pivotal shows for like the Vision storyline, and you definitely have a lot of questions about various directions of where you're going after this. Because I do think in the immediate, like this would take, like if Rollins and Punk was penciled in for Saturday night's main event, like that doesn't feel like the match coming off of an angle like this. It almost feels as though it's like a loose end we've got to tie up now, because the bigger story now is like Rollins with Reed and Breakker. But it was a very good edition of Raw. Great crowd in Perth. Really a great crowd in Australia all three nights. And you had some very good performances here, I thought, from Dominic, Asuka, and Kairi with their continued involvement with Rhea and Io Sky. Big angle to close off the show. And, yeah, their turnaround is 3 weeks when they've got Saturday night's main event. So that will become the next show to build toward, and then Survivor Series at the end of November.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I forgot to put up a feedback thread, so I am going to make
these. You're running low on time anyway right now. You have a lot to deal with, so I think we should close things off right here.
Yes. We will be back on Wednesday. So Pollock and Thurston, Wednesday at 1 Eastern, and then Wayne and I, up an hour later, we'll be up at about 11 Eastern on Wednesday night following 3 hours of Dynamite / Collision. What episode are you looking more forward to on Wednesday night?
Probably Dynamite.
Okay. Well, everybody, we will say goodbye. Thanks to all of you supporting us here on the Post Wrestling Cafe. Lots of great stuff coming up this week. And that concludes Rewind to Raw. This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.